Rob Stone from Fox Sports.
Hi, this is Georgie.
Hey, guys. This is Cole Leicher.
You are listening to the Unused Substitute.
The Unused Substitute.
And you're listening to the Unused Substitute.
Get off the bench!
Hey there, little Red Riding Hood!
Everybody, it is Thursday night at 8 p.m. You are listening either on Radio St. Peter or a podcast or some other way. This is the Unused Substitutes, part of the Beautiful Game Network. Find them online on Twitter at the BGNFM or online at BGN.FM. My name is Matt, and as mostly usual, as I guess whatever passes for usual for us, Dan, I think, is still on the other end of the line.
I hope so. If not, please call the medics.
Like, I love how I always sound unsure about whether you're there or not when we're literally talking just before the theme music comes on and we've been talking for like 30 minutes.
Exactly.
But weird things happen with this stuff sometimes, so you never know.
Exactly. Now I'm trying to get the boom arm back. There we go. I think I'm good. I can sit up now.
So we're back from the Thanksgiving break. And you know, we're hoping there'd be some news, and we had made arrangements in case there weren't, and we're going to get to those quite shortly. But then all of a sudden, the league decided to and the club drop a ton of news today. Some I would say is slightly unexpected. Some not so much, and even the big surprise, and we're going to get to that in a few minutes, is not entirely a surprise. I don't know. I wouldn't say, but maybe just actually seeing it is the surprise. But we have we'll be joined shortly by Neil Morris. You guys who have been listening to us since the NASL days and are still able to, you know, function as a human. We'll remember Neil. He's the kind of the beat reporter for North Carolina FC, formerly Carolina Railhawks. He's the host of the Inverted Triangle Soccer Podcast. With NTFC making their switch to USL, he's going to come on and talk to us a little bit about that, and also what's going on with NASL, US soccer, and everything else. And then we're gonna talk about all the other Rowdies news. How was your Thanksgiving, Dan?
It was interesting. My family always is, but it was good. How about you?
Wait, I don't think I ever got the answer, and I just realized this. Which speech did you go with?
I went with the one roasting my mother.
Okay. Always it's a good idea. Did it go over well?
Yeah.
Are you invited back next year?
Yeah, except I'm not allowed to give this speech next year. The duties got passed to somebody else.
Nice. Mine was good. We stayed around here in town, and my parents came over, and my wife's mom came over, and we just had a little small thing at our house. We tried something new this year. Rather than cooking a turkey ourselves, we ordered it from there was like a local barbecue place that would, you know, you could just place your order. They'd smoke it, they'd fry it however you wanted. We just did that and picked it up, and it was awesome, and it was nice not to have to do all that work. So it was nice. But I know there's people out there who get mad about Christmas decorations going up after like Halloween. I'm always one of those, like, I kind of always view Thanksgiving as a speed bump on the road to Christmas, so I'm glad to be on the other side and ready to put some funky looking lights up in the near future.
Thanksgiving is one of my favorite holidays, and I love it, and I'm sad it's over, but don't worry, I broke out my menorah.
Do you have the Mensch on the bench?
I do, actually. He's sitting on top of my bookcase with the menorah right now.
I do have my daughter's elf is giving me some side eye from the top of this bookcase right next to me. So I'm trying to be on my best behavior because I want my Christmas presents this year, I guess.
I've been thinking about taking the Mensch on a bench and hiding it randomly in Daisha's room. But I don't know what happens in that room, and I'm not quite sure I want to. No, I'm just kidding. But because I'm the first one home in the morning, or in the afternoon, so I figured it'd be kind of fun just to hide it around her room and see her or hear her freak out.
I do stuff like this with the teacher next door to me, especially around Halloween. We like try and prank each other and freak each other out or something. And she just discovered something I had left in her desk. That sounds worse than it is. Just like this little creepy Halloween decoration. And I worried for a second when I heard her screaming in the middle of first period, but she came over and reminded me of what it was. And I was like, oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, it's not my fault. It took her long enough to find it.
Yeah, I mean, if it was, you know, Halloween, we're through Thanksgiving.
I mean, maybe check the top drawer of your desk more often.
Luckily, well, actually, these days I don't even have a desk at my house. I'm using my coffee table in my living room.
Still on the couch?
Yeah, it's not very comfortable when you're trying to do things on a computer. I'm waiting for reasons, and then I'm going to buy a new desk and do a bunch of stuff, and then it'll be a podcast studio here where I can, and a workstation that I can do stuff in.
So, are you going to be flying solo?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was going to say maybe Alex Morrell needs a place to stay now that we know he's remaining with the team. He could.
I'm a bit far from St. Pete, but
it's not terrible.
Yeah, it's about 30 minutes. I'd say 30 to 45 minutes.
Neil Collins lives down here, and it's roughly the same. And you have to pay a toll to go over the bridge to get there. But that looks like I see things popping up on my screen here. I believe, based on the map that shows up under the phone number, I believe we have Neil Morris with us. Neil, you there?
From the great beyond of North Carolina.
Are you in the sunken place, Neil?
I live in this sunken place, man. That's why I go on these podcasts so I can peek my head out and say hi.
I think these days anyone who does anything at all related with Division II soccer feels like they live in the sunken place.
Look, dude, the virus is spreading. I think MLS is drifting down the slope. It's on a rock slide, mud slide down to where we trawl.
We'll bring them all down to our level.
I think all of American soccer, between not making the World Cup and MLS madness, is all in the sunken place now.
Yeah, it's like they've got nothing else to do for the next like 3-4 years. So it's let's just see who can light the biggest dumpster on fire is kind of what it's turning into. I'm not 100% sure, but I think you might be our first repeat guest. So we had you
Remind
on a while
me of the
back.
First time.
Huh? It might be the first. And so, you know, we the Rowdies took us away from NASL. We didn't get to talk to you as much last season. But now you're making the big flip, too. So first off, for those I don't know if anybody if we have random listeners who have never listened before. I'm sure if there are, they won't ever listen again. But for anyone who may not know who you are, what you do, why we have you on tonight, introduce yourself.
Well, I'm old by comparative standards to most lower division. I'm one of the crazy people who was born out of the unofficial tree of Bruce McGuire to Brian Korstad to Kartik Krishnar to me. I started covering, in addition, my day job is that I'm an attorney and a mediator. But in conjunction with that, I do writing. And as part of that, I began covering lower division soccer, namely through the Carolina Railhawks back in 2009. That just happened to be a few months before the breakaway mm-hmm. of the Team Owners Association from USL. So, and the owners of the then Railhawks at the time, Selby Wellman, was kind of one of the spearheads of that breakaway. So suddenly, this little random soccer team that I was covering because my editor at IndyWeek had asked me to A, learn about soccer, and B, cover a soccer team. Suddenly it was like ground zero for this niche sports coverage of lower division soccer. And that's kind of how I got headfirst into covering second division soccer and to some extent lower division as a whole. And I've been covering the RailHawks, now NCFC, since. And as an offshoot of that, mainly the NASL, occasionally USL, lately the NWSL because of the arrival of the North Carolina Courage.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while it drifts up to MLS through my coverage, which is now with WRAL Sports Fan in Raleigh, where I supply written content and a seasonal weekly podcast named the Inverted Triangle Soccer Podcast.
We talk kind of among ourselves all the time about how we kind of started this whole thing a few years ago, just to sit around and talk the regular garbage we talk about, the going to the game, what happened, who played well, who didn't, how bad the ref was. And for the last 2-3 years, it seems like we've talked about almost everything else except soccer. Has it seemed like you've gone down that road, like the actual soccer part becomes less and less of what we've been doing and everything else is taking over?
Well, it depends on what everything else is. If you're talking about lawsuits and that kind of thing, yeah. My podcast is a little different than most soccer podcasts. I think what I tried to do with it was there's no other guest. I mean, there's no other host. It's just me, and mm-hmm. I do very little yakking. It's an interview-based podcast, and I have soccer people on. So the discussion tends to be about soccer. I enjoy doing that. That being said, yeah, I mean, soccer has become like a lot of sports that the off season has dramatically more interest than the games, than who's winning, who's losing. I mean, it's like the seasonal coverage doesn't actually begin until the championship ends, and then suddenly it's what kind of tumult is going on? What teams are in? What teams are out? Who's going to court? Who's not? And it's been that way literally since I started covering this whole madness of lower division soccer. And as I alluded to earlier, you know, my introduction to the sport, I may have told you this story before when I was on before, but, you know, I'm a little unique, I guess, in that most people who cover soccer, whether not as reporters or fans, but they were fans of the sport, or they played the sport, and then they started covering it, which is why they were interested in covering it. The old joke that I've told 100 times is that in 2008, if you'd put a gun to my head and said, explain the offside rule, I wouldn't even have known what you were talking about. I was not a soccer fan, didn't care about it. And again, my old editor, David Fellerath, sort of recruited me into not just going to these RailHawk games, and then sort of slyly recruited me into covering them, and I sort of latched onto it. So my introduction to the sport was as a reporter, not as a fan. And I guess that's sort of, and I guess I would probably need to psychoanalyze myself more to figure out how that's influenced my approach to the sport as a whole, but I don't come to it as a fan. That doesn't mean I'm not passionate. I mean, I enjoy doing the coverage.
Mm-hmm.
But that also means it's, you know, certain things that a lot of reporters enjoy, like what team do you root for, whether it's in England or MLS. Well, I don't have a rooting interest. I enjoy watching it, but, you know, I have no favorite EPL team. I have no favorite MLS team. I don't really have a favorite lower division team other than the one I cover. So, yet at the same time, I'm very passionate about the sport itself. So, that's sort of the approach that I have from it, and I guess maybe that colors the way that I view certain things.
Okay. Well, last year the Rowdies and Ottawa made the leap from NASL over to up to whatever, however you want to look at it, to USL. I guess in the end it ended up being over to because it was same division in the end, provisionally, however you want to call it. And this year, North Carolina is going to make the switch as well. What's your sense? What was the reasoning behind North Carolina making the move?
As these things tend to be, the reasons are complicated and simple and straightforward at the same time. I think I probably need to go back a little bit. You know, there was a lot. Let's go back to the last offseason where there was a lot of rumors that the NASL might not get Division II sanctioning, that the league may fold, that teams, including the Railhawks, which later became NCFC, were going to leave to go to USL, and they were in substantive conversations with USL, which they were. But that didn't happen for a variety of reasons. I think they probably spanned the spectrum from concern about the price it would take to leave the NESL to no one owner wanting to be the one to leave the league and put it below the threshold for what would be ultimately be provisional D2 sanctioning. And that group included Steve Malik, who ended up playing a pretty key role in the sanctioning negotiations last offseason. Of course, different owners then come into the boardroom, including Brian Helmick with the Deltas and a few others, and there's sort of this change in tone from the league. They're going to be more cooperative. You remember the press release. Mm-hmm. Well, things tended to change as the season went along. You know, I think Helmick's star sort of faded as the problems of the Deltas became pretty apparent. While Rocco Camiso came in with the Cosmos and began some of the same sort of language or bellicose language that we've heard out of certain owners, including the Cosmos, in the past. Ricardo Silva filed a CAS claim seeking promotion and relegation, which, whether you agree with it or not, it necessarily forced U.S. Soccer to hire lawyers to go defend that. At the same time, Malik, who was strictly an NESL owner during the last sanctioning saga, becomes an NWSL owner, which necessarily puts him in deep ties with U.S. Soccer, who operates and runs NWSL. He also gets a seat on the U.S. Soccer Pro Council, and from that, as one of the two representatives on the U.S. Soccer Board of Directors, which puts him even closer tied with U.S. Soccer. And at the same time, he makes an application for an MLS expansion team. So all three of those things, although they were in the works beforehand, they all happened after the last sanctioning saga. So as this sort of reversion of NESL starts happening, back to a more antagonistic relationship with U.S. Soccer, whether justified or not, it starts putting Malik in a more precarious position because, you know, he's getting sort of stuck in the middle because of his ties with U.S. Soccer. Yeah, he's still working through NESL, trying to put the league in as best a position as they can. But at the same time, the league is not doing well. Ultimately, they are not approved for Division II sanctioning in early September. And it's at that point that Malik essentially decides that he's going to have to, that the cost, both monetary and otherwise, of remaining with the NASL, which, by the way, you know, I haven't even mentioned all the other problems of the NASL, whether it's constantly propping up teams year after year, the mm-hmm. cost and the monetary drain on owners. That, plus the compromising position that he found himself in because of being torn in two directions, plus the specter of not having Division II sanctioning, all combined so that I think Malik said, well, now's where we just got to make the switch. But, and it just basically came down to protecting both his best interests and the club's best interest. I think there are those in the front office who probably were angling for him to make this switch over a year ago. He didn't, for the reasons that I alluded to earlier. But everything that's happened in the 12 months since, culminating with the prospective loss of D2 sanctioning, sort of facilitated the departure. And by the way, I think the decision had probably been made after the after D2 sanctioning was denied that they were going to try to make a switch to USL. Mm-hmm. If there was any lingering doubt, that was definitely done away with when the NASL decided to file a lawsuit against U.S. Soccer. I mean, there was no way he was going to stick around after that.
Right.
But in fairness, I suspect he had probably decided before that happened.
You kind of mentioned too, I was laughing. You talk about the press release with the kinder, gentler NASL. Some of us refer to, and then kind of by mid-season that was gone. And also your background as a lawyer and a mediator. So NASL went for the injunction against U.S. Soccer to restore the Division II status while the lawsuit was ongoing. It was denied in the first. In the first hearing, and now they're appealing. What do you see happening? And it's coming up in what, like 2 weeks or something. What do you see happening? What do you think is likely to happen in this appeal?
Well, what's likely to happen in the appeal is that they're going to lose. Now, is that definitely going to happen? No. I mean, I did a whole long Twitter analysis or tweet analysis after the court's order came out, and I saw one little small angle that I won't bore you with where I thought that there could, a court, if it interpreted the law a certain way, could find that the lower court maybe didn't do a proper analysis on one aspect of their opinion. But some other legal experts who have covered this in depth, like Stephen Bank and others, have although they've recognized that same potential issue, don't find it as problematic as I initially thought. That notwithstanding, it's very difficult to get a preliminary injunction, period. And then once you lose one, it is incredibly difficult to get one on appeal or abuse of discretion standard. So it's just a sheer is it a fait accompli? Not necessarily, but the odds are extremely high or long, I should say, on the NASL winning the appeal. But the real interesting question is what happens to the NASL if they lose the appeal. And that's kind of what I've been sort of banging about for a month or so, trying to, you know, everybody kind of gets caught in the present.
Right.
What does this reply brief say? What is this deadline? You know, what is this, you know, the next politician who wants the Cosmos to have D2? What is Camiso saying about Malik? That's all great. You know, which teams are folding today. That's all important stuff. But, you know, the calendar becomes an issue. And so
right.
What happens with these teams and what options they have if this thing drags into early January is the great unknown.
So if they lose the appeal and that's it, I mean, if I understand correctly, and I obviously haven't seen all the paperwork in the contracts, but isn't there something in the NASL kind of owner's agreement that if the league doesn't have D2 sanctioning, the exit fee for teams to leave drops dramatically?
Yeah, well, yes.
Okay, so North Carolina's already...
That was in the NASL membership agreement several years ago. A reliable source has told me that that may or may not be the situation for all teams now, but I think the answer to your question is yes.
Especially for some of the older teams.
Whether that's an impediment to some teams leave jumping ship before that point, like NCFC, is probably less so. I think NCFC just had to get out no matter what. But yes, I believe that provision is in there, and that's probably why. Well, yeah,
maybe why some of the teams who have been rumored also to be making the jump haven't done it just yet. They're waiting to see how this plays out. If it's a you know, some kind of cost saving measure if the fee drops. And that was one of the rumors going around last year, was that they were, you know, the league was one team away from triggering that drop, and no one wanted to be the last team to pay the full price.
Let me sort of just amplify that as much as I can. There's certain things I can say and certain things I can't.
Uh-huh.
I think that was the case last year. You've seen the teams sort of more liberally departing lately, like the Deltas, like Edmonton, like North Carolina FC. And I think the backdrop to that, whether or not a lower exit fee has been triggered or not, or when it officially can get triggered, all of that is kind of bulldozed by the fact that in between last year and now, you have seen other teams leave and maybe a behind-the-scenes dispute about what they were going to pay as an exit fee.
Right.
And what they ultimately ended up paying as an exit fee, like Ottawa, mm-hmm. like Tampa Bay, like going back to San Antonio. And I think how those cases how those disputes ended up probably colored the way that some of these teams viewed what they might ultimately have to do in order when they left the league.
Okay.
I hope that's not too vague.
No. The one thing, and this is the one thing that when I saw you tweet about this, and I was like, okay, I want to get Neil on again and talk about this. So after the injunction, NASL tweets out their statement with the letter from the interim commissioner, and part of it says that they are you know investigating several changes to the way they operate business, and you and I think maybe I don't know if it was. Bank or even Mickey Turner said something about, is this the NASL going single entity possibly? I mean, that kind of seems to be almost what they're hinting at. What's the likelihood of that, and how long, if they did something like that, do you think that would be sustainable?
Sustainable, my goodness.
It's not a word we use often in lower division soccer, but we got to throw it in every now and then.
No, God, no. I was just looking at I won't go down that rabbit hole. I was just looking back at the teams who were in USL 1 and 2 back in 2009. But mm-hmm. anyway, sustainable. you know, that analysis that we kind of latched onto and that wording that we latched onto was born less out of it. It's not born out of any inside information at all. It was just very conspicuous language,
right?
Coupled with what the reality of the situation is, and what I mean by that is, we all know that there's a prohibition in U.S. Soccer Pro League guidelines against joint-owned teams outside of single entity. That's spelled out explicitly. We also look at what the reality of the NASL is, because the league is down to, if we assume that the two California teams are still in play, seven teams. Maybe you can get third division sanctioning, but even if the league tried to do a negotiated settlement with U.S. Soccer that allowed them to get D2 sanctioning next year, I don't know how U.S. Soccer allows them to do it with seven teams.
Right.
And we've got the rumors, which are grounded in reality, because I've heard verification of some of this, that there have been phone calls to some MPFL teams to see if they can be financially propped up for next year. Now, I don't know what the viability of that is presently, but it may be the only play that the NASL has to get their rank, the number of in their rank, up to any kind of viable size. So how do you do that and not run afoul of the independently owned guideline? Well,
it's got to be single entity at that point, it seems.
There's one exception. So, I mean, I know that's sort of several steps, but how else? It's a reality that the NASL is down 17. Okay?
Right.
And I don't see how you get sanctioning for anything unless U.S. Soccer just gives them D3, but the NASL seems hell-bent to not have D3. If they ever negotiate something to get D2, they're not going to be able to do it with seven teams, even if U.S. Soccer is feeling generous. So they're going to have to find other teams. They're going to have to financially prop them up. U.S. Soccer is going to want to comb through those finances as a part of any kind of terms and conditions of a resolution. It's not like the NASL bought goodwill now.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to get around the independently owned framework is single entity. Now, I may be barking up a wrong tree, but you know the NASL's wording of their press release is what fed this speculation, because it was so odd.
Right. And this is one of the I'm looking at this and thinking about, you know, the NASL kind of comes about as, you know, originally as we're going to be the alternative to MLS. We're not going to have these single entity rules. It's going to be independently owned and run clubs. And now, you know, it's one of those, you bite the bullet and do this if that's what keeps you alive. Once they do it, is there ever any going back?
No. And I think the other driving force behind, if that is in the consideration, if it is in being consideration, I think the other driving force behind it, other than the reality of the guidelines and the reality of needing teams, is the fact that, you know, there's been so much speculation about, well, why don't these teams just team up with Peter Wilt and apply with NISA to be D2 or mm-hmm. D3, and, you know, they could merge with the interested teams there, and they could go. There's a pretty clear answer to that question of why it hasn't happened at this point. It's because, and although we don't know the governing structure of NISA, we can pretty rest assured that while it may not necessarily be a complete franchise model like USL, maybe, we know for darn sure it's not a one-member, one-vote LLC like NASL.
Right.
It's without a doubt a situation where Club 9 Sports is basically has the governing say-so over the league, so that Rocco Commisso and maybe even Robert Palmer and Ricardo Silva are probably not apt to jump into a league where they're not going to have the same level of control that they've enjoyed over the last year or more.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whatever gambit that they can figure out where they remain in charge of the league is what they're going to want to gravitate to, and maybe single entity is that. Or if they could figure out a way to prop up the NASL with its current governing structure. But that seems to be, the more I hear and the more I look into it and the more I talk to people, that's why they're giving it a go in any way, shape, or form that they can with the NASL rather than jumping into somebody else's league.
Right.
Whether it's USL or NISA, yeah, where they would have virtually far less control than what they have now.
One more thing that I was wondering about.
I'm sorry. Okay. Less control and far less, if any, access to entry fees and exit fees.
Right. Yeah. The other thing I was thinking about when all this started happening again this offseason is going back to all the stuff that happened last offseason. And I don't, you know, I don't have the same connections. I don't talk to the same people as you do. I don't have the same info. And I try to make sure I don't present myself that I do. But we know that at one point U.S. Soccer was working with NASL and USL on the possibility of some kind of merger. And it's kind of always seemed to me from an outsider point of view that they don't want to be too involved, because then it gives the impression that they're, you know, preferring one over the other, or may ultimately have a hand in the demise of one league or clubs or something like that. And they want to avoid that appearance. At the same time, would it have been better off in the long run to just kind of rip the Band-Aid off and somehow, I don't know what more pressure they could have exerted or what other things they could have done to fuel some kind of merger last year, so that you don't keep doing this every summer for the foreseeable future?
I think they tried mightily. I go back to the conversations that I had last offseason, and again, it's very popular to criticize and very accurate to criticize U.S. soccer, but my impression was that they asserted about as much pressure as they felt like they could on private entities,
mm-hmm,
to try to make that happen. But the problem was, and frankly, this is probably why NESL ended up not only surviving but getting provisional D2 status. We all know the story. USL didn't want to take in all the teams, or more accurately, all the owners.
Right.
And I think that is still the situation now. There is some belief that the entry fee of USL was prohibitive to some owners. I think that's probably true. Although last year, I think there was a lot of leeway for negotiation on that,
mm-hmm,
for the teams that USL and the owners that USL wanted. But USL was not going to take all the teams, including the ones who were ready to continue playing. And though that would have put those teams effectively out of business, and U.S. Soccer did not want that. And, you know, I mean, a lot of us at the time thought USL might have overplayed their hand and given NASL a lifeline that if they got their act together, they could reconstitute. Well, that didn't happen. But USL is under even less pressure now,
right?
To take the owners that they don't want, and frankly, given a lot of what's happened over the last 12 months, I can't blame them.
No,
no private entity should be compelled to take a member that they don't believe meets the mission of their corporation, and frankly, NASL wouldn't do the same thing. So I get it. I don't blame them, but I think that level of being overly selective, or maybe even hubris, gave the NASL its lifeline last year. But now, because of sort of the antagonism that has sort of grown over the last 12 months, I think U.S. Soccer was at the point of just saying, "Well, the heck with this."
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that the same level of pressure was put on USL now, who probably feels even less compunction to do it. Because, you know, remember, you know, the carrot for USL last time was getting D2 sanctioning. I mean,
right.
They were trying to get that. And then now that they have it, although there's still concern about retaining it,
mm-hmm.
given a whole host of factors, I think they feel, you know, less worried about losing something they've already got, given some of the growth that they continue to enjoy. That it would be incredibly detrimental if USL lost D2 sanctioning, given, you know, the growth that they are enjoying both throughout this year and right now. U.S. Soccer, I mean, that would be, regardless of what you think of USL and some of the standards that some of the teams don't meet. Stripping them of D2 sanctioning right now would be a disaster for the league,
right?
And their plans. And I don't think that USL thinks that U.S. Soccer is going to do it. U.S. Soccer doesn't want to do it, and so there's not as much leverage that U.S. Soccer has on USL to do anything now. Oh, and by the way, some of the NASL teams that might have considered joining USL now because of everything that's happened over the last 12 months probably don't want to go there. So it's just a marriage that just doesn't appear to happen. I don't know there's a single NASL club that'll go to USL now, but other than NCFC.
Okay. All right. One last thing, and we'll let you go. And it's don't want to keep you too late on a weeknight.
I love this, man.
MLS. MLS put out their kind of final four for the first two. I don't know if that's the fancy way we're calling it, for the first two expansion slots. Neither the Rowdies, who we're going to talk about in a little while, or North Carolina were in that final four. Where does North Carolina go from here? What do they do now? We've seen, like Phoenix says they're going to deliver an enhanced bid. St. Louis somehow managed to express complete shock that they weren't picked. What's next for North Carolina?
North Carolina needs to get their downtown stadium deal. That's it. If they get it, they're in the ball game, despite what some people may believe. If they don't get it, they're not in the ball game. I mean, that's it. And it's not because Raleigh is this rock star market. It's a good soccer market. It has a lot of positives. But the stadium deal that is in play, is it just some stadium that, you know, a shared use with other teams, maybe quasi-soccer specific, you know, a mile or two removed from the center of the town? No. If it comes to fruition, it is a soccer specific stadium of 20,000 seats that is in the urban core of Raleigh, which makes it an incredibly heavy lift.
Right.
I think it is a Herculean task to get that thing done. The odds are firmly against it. But it is such a tailor-made USL-type dream spot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not you. I'm sorry, any MLS dream spot. If they can get that somehow done ahead of these other markets, and their stadium aspirations, Raleigh's in the mix, regardless of whatever cons people want to assign to the market. If they don't, which the odds are they won't,
right?
Then I don't see that Raleigh has a chance in the world of getting being one of the final two spots. But that's where they go from here.
Okay.
And you know, and I'm curious to hear what you guys think about the Rowdy situation. And I feel free to rebut. You know, I was thinking about sort of the current crop of applicants. You know, a lot of these groups are not going to be able to change the circumstances on the ground of their application.
Mm-hmm.
But almost every remaining applicant, at least in theory, can change it. Whether some stadium plan materializes or some investor, you know, swoops down. I mean, in theory, everyone else can substantively change the posture of their application, except two: San Antonio and Tampa Bay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how either of those two can substantively change the makeup of their application. What do you think?
I mean, just going off the top of my head, I mean, they've got the, you know, with the referendum, they've got the support of the local government, and they can point to the support of the voters. We heard there were some rumblings about, you know, what the actual stadium plan was. I think it was actually Kardec posted, he had talked to an MLS owner who said the design, the plan, whatever, was naive. I guess you could go back and rework that.
And by the way, there was a tell on that in Bill Edwards' press release yesterday, where he talked about going back and I forget the wording, but making sort of
continuing to invest in it. Yeah. Yeah, I caught
clearly
that too.
Something there.
And then really the only thing, and this is kind of the thing we've been waiting on, it's really been kind of radio silence since the referendum results came out. And I don't know if they thought they were just going to kind of cruise in there. But it's almost like, you know, one of the cliches about a soccer game is that they scored too early. And so you kind of put up your big wins as far as your referendum, your local government support, really early. And then it's been really quiet. And we've been kind of hoping or waiting for possibly some news coming out about other investors, other local people getting involved. And that hasn't happened yet. I mean, that to me is the one big thing that could still maybe come in and make a difference. I was reading yesterday where Loecki down in Miami says he has fears that the stadium deal isn't going to happen. If Miami all of a sudden is out, I don't know if that tilts things back here. If they want to have two Florida teams and here's the next option, then, you know, if that affects things as well too.
That's a fair point. And I think the other thing that I wonder about, and again, it all comes down to the stadium. I mean, that's what it all comes down to. But
right,
you know, we've heard from years that MLS really wants to broaden their Southeast footprint. I mean, and I guess Atlanta and Miami would accomplish that, but if Miami's not happening, Nashville is sort of quasi Southeast.
Yeah.
I mean, how else do you do that? There's only two remaining options. There's Tampa and there's Raleigh. And Charlotte, although they don't have their act together and they're sort of dead in the water right now.
Right. Speaking of Charlotte, are you finally get to do away games this year? You can go to Charleston and you can go to Charlotte and you know, I don't know the exact times off the top of my head, but maybe be back home in the same day. Are you planning on making some trips for once?
We'll see. Those still aren't short trips, and doing that for a, you know, what happened this year is interesting. Is that from a reporter point of view, the arrival of the Courage meant that on most weekends, one of those two teams had a home game.
Right.
And so it ended up being that I didn't even write game recaps of away games for either team, because there was always a home game to cover. And if we ever got a weekend when neither team was home, it felt like a breath of fresh air.
Yep.
And so what, you know, the notion of hitting the road for the men's team is diminished even with these regional rivals, because frankly, on most of those weekends, the Courage is probably going to be local, and that's what I'll be covering. So chances are I won't be hitting to Richmond anytime soon, but that's the main reason.
I know we have a group of fans down here that enjoy making the trip to North Carolina and have done so in the past, and I've got friends and my wife has friends in there, and maybe at one point we will actually get to meet and do this face to face for once.
Tampa's the place I need to go, because I've actually got some relatives that live down there, and I haven't been to a Rowdies game. I'm not saying this because I'm on your podcast. That's a spot that I always – it is a spot I wanted to get to, in an environment. I know people who've gone to the games, and they love the environment there downtown. So I'd love to go down there and hang out and go to a game. So maybe one day that's what I'll do.
Well, we'll see when the schedule comes out. Maybe you can do the sequel to the soccer tour and do a Southeast-only version, and we'll take care of you if you come down here.
Yeah.
All right, Neil, thanks for joining us. Hopefully we'll get to talk some more during the season. Glad to have you back in the same league. It's good to have actual journalists, so people have someone better to listen to than just us to go to for information. Thanks for coming on again tonight. All right, Neil, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Thanks for having me on anytime.
All right, have a good evening.
Yeah, man.
Thanks. All right, that's, dude, Neil's one of the best guys to talk to.
I think we could do like a series. Like, I mean, he's just insightful. He's knowledgeable top to bottom. He's just, I could sit and listen to him talk lower division soccer all day.
Also, I'm going to go to I'm going to pull out this, the thing you hear on the local radio all the time. But honestly, like, of the people we've had who have called in from an actual phone line as opposed to using an online connection, that's the best phone connection we've ever had.
the landline?
Yeah, it's like there's no like static, there's no like skips or anything in there. It sounded perfect. That was good. I'm glad to see. I'm glad to have Neil back, because Neil's a fun guy to talk with about games and stuff like that. So he mentioned, our kind of reaction to the Rowdy stuff. We'll get to some of that stuff in a few minutes. I just kind of jotted down real quick before we came online, just the league stuff that happened in the last 2 weeks that's, still stuck in my head that I can remember. Harrisburg changed their name and their logo and everything else.
Good.
The City Islanders are no more. Now it's the creatively named Penn FC, who is part of Rush Soccer, who I saw some of their kids out at the U.S. U-17 game last night. Some of their, because there's a bunch of youth clubs and academies come out and they play during the day. They have like a tournament showcase kind of thing. So that group was out there last night. And they're all very looking forward to becoming Penn FC players at some point in the future, I'm sure.
I feel like it's like that elementary or middle school game where you'd be part of the Penn 15 club. You have them write it down, and I think that's where we're at. And I think I'm just going to refer to them from now on as Penn 15.
Penn 15. I still want Teller 15 then. next up, and this came out today, Rochester had their kind of 2 week push for raising the funds that they, have the funds committed they needed for this year. And it says they, the fans and the business community came out and did a great job, but it just wasn't enough. So they are taking a 1 year hiatus. Remember when the Austin Aztecs took a 1 year hiatus because their stadium was flooded and we're still waiting for them to come back. Hopefully it's not the case for Rochester. Although if they do end up just going completely out of operations, which would be a terrible thing. Like, they've been around since the, 20 something years now, since 96. They've won the Open Cup, they've won the USL. It's one of the kind of long running names in lower division soccer. I don't want them to completely cease existing, but can we buy their stadium and move it down here in pieces? Would that be possible?
I don't think that's how it works, but
if they can move the crew to Austin, then we can they're not the Rochester
doing that
stadium.
That's not allowed either.
I thought they're moving them to Portland or something.
Yeah, Portland's moving to Butte, Montana.
But I mean, the stadium's already the right colors, and it's a neat little place. So I hope it works out that they can come back next year, or next season after in 2019. We'll see what happens there. The other one, Charleston's like hemorrhaging players. Charleston, you could say, in the words of others, is being dismantled roster-wise. They had like three or four guys that signed with Salt Lake, that signed with Cincinnati. They've got some work to do, or are they looking at cutting back on their team again in terms of, I mean, they, you know, they were up there, what, they were the second seed, weren't they? Last year? Weren't they?
I believe so, yeah.
If we had won the other game, we would have played them.
Yeah.
And now, like, you know, their center back, who loved Joe Cole so much he couldn't wait to go in studs up on him and not get carded for it, is off to Cincinnati. They're kind of their squad of, I believe the Jamaican players that were all out for the Gold Cup have all kind of gone to Real Salt Lake as a group. Like, it's a big exodus up there. I don't know if there'll be a team left for Neil to go on a road trip to.
They'll rebuild. I mean, I'm not worried about that. At least teams do this. Lower divisions in all sports just blow up and then rebuild and they come back. I'm not too worried about it. Yeah.
All right, let me
the fun stuff.
Yeah, let me crack open a drink so we can get to this stuff so I can there's the Coke Zero that'll keep me going for this. I probably should be drinking some Big Storm instead. All right, so as we talked about with Neil Morris, the MLS's Final Four for the first round of expansion is out. Cincinnati, Nashville, Detroit, and Sacramento. You know, at some point they're going to pick a city that hasn't even applied just because. Rowdies aren't in it. We'll get to that in a second. But who do you think gets picked, or who do you think does get picked? Who do you think should get picked from these two?
Sacramento is a shoo-in, in my opinion. I think I want to say Nashville gets it. I just feel like that bid seems to be a bit more put together, not hinging on some weird stuff. And since he seems to be teetering. I think I did see that they approved the stadium stuff.
Well, it's like the city approved it, but the I don't know if it's the neighborhood where they want to put it, like that area's council was like, no, we don't want you.
Unanimously no, yeah, if I recall. And so it's like I said, it's a precarious situation there. So I think you go Nashville, but it might, you know, since we're a little short on time for all of this stuff, I'm going to put these 2 points together. How do you, if you have two sets of expansion news, right? You have the first round and the second round.
I know what you're going to say because I had the same thought.
And you had two teams in each. Why, if you announced four finalists, doesn't that mean the two that don't get the first round should get the second round?
Are they automatically going to be in the final two for the next round, or are they automatically going to get the, like, yeah, I wondered about that too. Maybe you pick three and the one who doesn't goes, like, you know, to the next.
I thought I'd be devastated that you know, or very upset, not devastated, but pretty, like, you know, a little peeved that the Rowdies weren't going. But all, like Neil said, you know, Neil started his interview, like, it just feels like MLS is tanking, and it's just I don't care. As long as I have the Rowdies, I'm happy. League no longer, it doesn't matter to me. I don't, MLS is not safer anymore than the lower leagues at this point. So just screw it all. Just keep the Rowdies here and playing, and I'm happy.
Yeah, and I posted something about that yesterday because I was at work till late and I didn't get home. Or the other day when the names came out, I was at work kind of late and didn't get home and didn't get a chance to post on it till later. I think we've said this. I hope this is, you know, people aren't saying now we're like suddenly changing our tune. I don't care what the league is. I don't care whether it's Division I, Division II, MLS, USL, whatever. My main reason for backing this was, number one, I think it's the main avenue to keep the ownership active, interested, involved, investing. Also, it's the way to get that stadium. So I'm there for that. I don't care what the league is, because I'm not going there to see the teams that we're playing against. I'm going there to see our team. And was the whole idea that if Rowdy's got an MLS and if something happened, then that name is gone forever. And this whole Austin Columbus thing has really soured me on that, because that's not the crew. if when they move to Austin, whether they and whatever, if they went and put another team back, like this whole garbage, you can apply for another expansion team. That's not the same crew. The fans there don't want that anymore.
It depends on who you ask.
Yeah, I mean, there's a large group. The relationship there is broken, and we can say, you know, something's going to happen in the end, and it's going to be saved, and it's going to stay there. If it does, they've got to be sold, because there's no going back to normal with the ownership they have right now.
Yeah, it's just my thing. I think we like you said, we've said it from the beginning. We want the Rowdies safe and able to continue. And it, for the longest time, MLS seemed like the safest bet with the lower level soccer wars, but it doesn't feel that way anymore to me. The new stadium is cool and all. That would be great, but like, I don't know. Like, Al Lang feels like home the way it is. I don't know. That's one thing that I did dread about possibly going to MLS is losing the homey like connections with the team and whatnot. But I just don't want to lose the team. I don't care. I'm club over league. I'm club over almost everything. Like, yeah. Just give me a team. Give me somewhere to go on my Saturday nights and enjoy local soccer and these guys that, you know, I don't want to lose that.
We do have some breaking news that may not be super exciting. One of the rumored areas, or one of the areas that USL had targeted for future expansion, was Hartford, Connecticut. And the whole thing kind of hinged around getting a deal, getting approval to redevelop an existing stadium up there. And apparently there were two or three other groups that were also involved in the process. The city of Hartford has recommended that the USL group be given permission to redevelop the stadium and pursue a USL franchise for the 2019 season.
That's cool.
Yeah, a nice little trip up north. That'd be pretty interesting. All right, like we said, we're running a little short on time, but we want to get through a couple other things first. So we'll wait and see. Am I surprised? No. Like I said, it's been kind of radio silence from the team, at least on the MLS stuff, for a while. So none of this really surprises me. But I'm not as disappointed, like you said, as like I thought I might be. There's other work that needs to be done in other places on other things. And we've beaten that drum on another show, and we'll do it again later, but not tonight. Takuya Yamada, at what, 43? Like, there's actually someone older than me. I didn't know this. Is hanging him up finally. He went to Japan after he left the Rowdies and played there for several seasons, and is retiring. So congrats to Yama on that. Would love to see him back around St. Pete again. Just, you know, it's just a visit or something.
I believe it was Jake. I mean, retire the man's number. He deserves a proper send-off. He was a cornerstone of this club, and I would love to have him back around in some capacity, or just back in St. Pete in general. He's just he is one of the few modern Rowdy legends.
All right, ready to get on to the other stuff?
Yeah, let's get into the
all right. We finally have, after you jinxed us with a tweet yesterday, we finally have some roster news. I think I posted something about it too, so I can't give you all the blame. It started off this morning, moments before my first class of the day started, with with Detroit fans, with Cosmos fans, saying, "Hey, did you see this? Super Matty Pickens, MV Pickens, is the first signing for the new USL team in Nashville." Are you in your feels? Oh, I think we lost Dan here. All right. Well, I'll just go on. I'm not 100% surprised by it. I, you know, still kind of a shock to see it come across the screen, but that's what happened. Don't know any of the specifics behind the deal. I believe possibly that he was out of contract at the end of the season. I talked to him, moments after the playoff loss to Red Bull, asked him if we'd see him back this year. He says, yeah, maybe we'll see. So I don't know if he was out of contract, not offered a new deal by the club. I don't know if he was still had a contract and they came out some agreement. I don't know if Nashville just made such a huge offer that he couldn't resist. But good luck to him. Best wishes. except for two games this year. Matty Pickens is gone. So now that it turns to who is still part of the team, and the club put out finally one of the last clubs to do this, the list of who they're keeping and who they're negotiating with. No one's been strictly ruled out just yet. Except for Matt Pickens, but everybody else who is not signed, they say they're in negotiations with. So right now, under contract for next year, in goal is Akira Fitzgerald, who started six times last year, started at the beginning of the season, had four shutouts. Neil Morris about that. Are you back?
I'm back, sorry.
I thought you got hung up on or something. Pickens to Nashville, what's your thoughts?
It makes sense. He back in the mountains, back, closer to home.
It's not as far for him to go hunting now, is it?
What?
It's not as far for him to go hunting now.
Right.
And the turkey supply is going to be huge.
The coach of Nashville is the one he won the MLS Cup with.
I hadn't read into all that. Okay, so that makes a little bit more sense.
It's a good setup for him. I'm glad. I am sad, but Akira definitely is more than talented enough to carry us forward in that aspect.
And Nico Campbell may still be an option. We'll wait and see what happens. I was thinking out loud, and I don't know. I don't know if you know either. Was Pickens out of contract? Was he done?
I believe so.
Okay. So either the club didn't make him an offer or Nashville just made him a better offer.
Yeah, I think Nashville just made him the better offer. Okay. I'm sure we had a hard line, which, I love Matty, but money can be used elsewhere. I mean, with the defense we had, and Akira is a great goaltender as well, or goalkeeper, sorry. I've been talking hockey too much, goalkeeper as well. I love Matty. I would rather him be here, fan favorite. We've defended him many times. We can move forward with Akira Fitzgerald.
I wonder if that plays into it. When you go back and look at the games where he had, one save or, no shots on target, is it a thing where, yeah, he's a great keeper, but we can get by with something different and reinforce other areas because the way the defense has kind of held up in some spots. I didn't really thought about it that way.
We only have the left side of the defense, Neil Collins and Zach
Portillo. Yeah, so Akira Fitzgerald's under contract for next year. Neil Collins and Zach Portillo's. I'm very happy to see both of them back. I'm happy with all the guys that are back. And there's some guys who are not on the signed right now list that I would like to see back. But we'll kind of go through and check all these off real quick. In the midfield, Nanchoff, Alex Morel, they picked up his contract option. That was one, we've said it, we're kind of worried about the attention he might get. Now, it's still a possibility. They pick up the option. Maybe they pick up the option in the hopes that someone wants to pay a transfer fee for him. We'll see.
You bite your tongue, sir.
Yeah, but then it's kind of that same situation with Damian Lowe and with other players next year or last year. Sure, you could maybe get a fee for him, but also you don't want to be seen as the team that stands in the way of the guy moving to, a higher division or a different country or something like that. We'll see. I hope that it's that he's around to stay for the season. Martin Vingard, Marcel Schaefer, and Joe Cole are returning. So
those last two were no shock. I mean,
yeah.
Joe maybe slightly, but Marcel was the only lock. At one point, I had the thought that maybe we're just going to build a team around Marcel Schaefer, like have him watch USL footage and be like, I want him.
Not a bad idea, honestly. And up top, one forward signed so far, Sebastian Guinzatti. I know you're happy with that one.
I'm going to wear my Islander hat to Rowdy's games from now on in solidarity with Seba.
All right, and currently in negotiations with basically everybody else but Pickens because he went to Nashville. Nico Campbell.
You're forgetting somebody that has fallen to the wayside that is not mentioned in here, and that is Luke Bowden.
I knew when I counted up the numbers, it seemed like one was off. Okay, Luke Bowden is not mentioned in there, so safe to assume that he's gone.
Yeah,
not surprising. I mean, we haven't seen him in like 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, he was around. I ran into him a couple times. I ran into him in Orlando.
as far as seeing the field, at least, basically, or even making the bench. So good luck to him. Hopefully it works out wherever he ends up next. Defenders that we're still talking to, Darnell King, Kyle Porter, Tam McCandaweary, Hunter Gorski. There's four names on there. Give me, if you could only pick two, who would they be?
Darnell King and Hunter Gorski.
This is a tough one, and I know I'll catch some flack from it, especially from Perkins, but I'm going to go Kyle Porter and Hunter Gorski. And I love Tam, and I love Darnell, but if I had to pick two, I think I'm going Kyle Porter and Hunter Gorski.
Kyle Porter was great too. I just think Darnell, he fits Stu Campbell's style a bit more. Kyle Porter was solid for that nice stretch there. But Darnell King and Hunter Gorski. I mean, I love Tam, but I think Tam's done going by the fact that he went from being our captain to barely making the team. And I mean, Kyle Porter was there for a good successful run. But I also think that Darnell King offers some versatility if we needed it on the right wing, if something goes wonky with the midfield.
All right, moving on to the midfield. Keith Savage, Leo Fernandez, Justin Chavez, Walter Restrepo. Give me two names.
Justin Chavez and Leo, Leo Fernandez and Justin Chavez.
Chavez is my first pick too, but I think I go Restrepo. I think Restrepo showed me more in the short time than Fernandez did. Now, he was injured, didn't have a chance to, but I think I go Restrepo on this.
All right.
And again, it's a tough one. And also, if this is the end of Keith Savage's run in Tampa Bay, I hope it's not something done by a press release. Like, the guy has been here forever, has played.
I just thought of this. You can do it in the press release, but in the home opener, bring him out pregame or at halftime.
Yeah, there's got to be something. And Keith, you know, he's talked about going into coaching, possibly pursuing coaching. This could be, you know, maybe he's a guy that ends up working with U23s or even, you know, some kind of advisor to the Tampa Bay United Rowdies or something. He becomes part of that system. I have a feeling. I don't have any inside info. I don't have any scoops. I'm trying not to reveal. I just have a feeling he stays involved with the club somehow, even if it's not as a player.
He should.
Definitely as he should. Forwards, Darwin Jones, Martin Patterson, Georgi Ristov. Who do you want back at any price? Who do you want back at a smart price? And who do you say thank you and move on?
I'm going to probably catch a little flack for this, but obviously Georgi Ristov come back at any price, throw the pocketbook at him. But for the right price, bring back Darwin Jones, and thank you, Martin Patterson, for what you've done. I think
that's a tough call to make. You're a brave man. He's got metal claws, you know, and he can come after you.
I love me some Pat Dog, but it's just, you know, I think he's in the waning days. And I think you can get Darwin, if you played Darwin Jones correctly in the center of the pitch and fed him balls on the ground to let him run on to, I think you would have noticed a big difference there. He played striker for Seattle's B team, I believe.
Yep.
And was good there. I just think we need to, if we keep him, play a system that works for him. I would say, I mean, the 4-3-3, obviously, or whatever it ended up being, worked well. But I think if you put Darwin's as, you know, like a 4-4-2 type, with Georgie and Darwin allowing Georgie to do some hold-up play like he's good at and feed Darwin, I think you see some results. That's my two.
This is really hard for me to make a call, and because I think we need to see more from Darwin Jones. Like, Darwin Jones needs to have more of a chance to show what he can do. Martin Patterson, I love the passion, the intensity, and the ability to just, you know, come on the field and score a goal in the first 30 seconds or get a goal when you need it the most. But again, like just with Keith Savage, there's no way Georgi Ristov's time in Tampa Bay should end with the press release, especially coming off a season where he was the leading scorer. I mean, it's not like this is a guy who was obviously out of gas and couldn't do it anymore. Had one of his best seasons in a Tampa Bay uniform last year, and proved a lot of people wrong who thought he was done. This is a special guy in regards to this team, to the fans. this is a tough one to figure out. This is why we don't work in the front office.
I was pretty decisive.
Which is why you don't work in the front office. Yeah, all right. One more thing I want to throw out there, because I meant to say this when we were talking about it. So with Rochester taking a hiatus, they did say that some USL games would be played at their stadium. What are they going to do? What's your take on that? How's that going to work out? Is this going to be like NFL games in London where teams have to give up a home game and go to Rochester so that the fans can see all the other teams in the league? Like, that's not fair. I want to see other teams besides the Rowdies come here and play sometimes, maybe.
I read that, and it's just weird. I don't know what they meant by that, but I guess that would be a good idea, per se. Like, in my head, that makes sense. Like, hey, we don't have to do anything but run the stadium, and we can get some revenue that way, right?
Well, I read an article the other day, they don't even own the stadium.
The last team owner owns the stadium.
Yeah.
So I don't know why you would even do that, right? Like, I just, it doesn't make sense. The whole situation is nuts.
It's got to be something contractually in order for them to have the ability to play there if they come back in 2019, I think. So here's the two thoughts I had. Toronto is like less than a four-hour drive if you just follow the land route, or there's a trip across Lake Ontario. And we know Toronto plays like in the back of an elementary school, is what it looks like on the television. And the place that they play at means they have to have like 3 p.m. kickoffs. Maybe Toronto can have a few games in Rochester. And it's not a killer drive for them. Although, you know, regionally, that's probably their closest rival. Now you're going to call their stadium home for a game. That's kind of weird. Also,
I don't think Toronto 2 has a rival.
Yeah. I mean, besides like curfews and stuff like that, it also could be the site for like a Red Bull to Toronto 2 game, possibly.
Yeah, maybe. It's very interesting to see how that plays out.
I don't see how it gets anyone excited to come out to the stadium and watch it, being in Rochester, but I have a feeling it's just some kind of contractual thing. They have to have a certain number of games there, in order to, you know, maintain their occupancy, or, you know, whatever. This is why we don't do legal stuff, but it seems like we do more and more of that every year.
Don't remind me.
All right. Anything else we want to throw out there?
Nope.
All right. So we're kind of in that period where there's not a lot of stuff going on. And like today, like, we heard about the roster news coming, I think 10 minutes before it happened. Like, we don't get date. Now, do you think they did that because they thought we were on yesterday instead of Thursday? Instead of Wednesday, I mean?
I mean, I don't even know if anybody really thinks we're on now.
I think they just planned this around us to try and deprive us of stuff to talk about, because it's fun.
I bet if the Matty Pickens news didn't happen today, we'd still be waiting for
it. I have a feeling, too. I think that you know, kind of tipped their hand. Not just that, okay, he's gone, but now people are like, well, who do we have? What are they doing? Let's put something out there and show that everything is not underground. That also reminded me, and I wanted to talk about Bill Edwards' statement that Neil Morse talked about, but maybe we'll save that for another time.
We'll do that later.
I mean, we kind of did it on Twitter, but I'd like to do it on the show too at some point. So I'm not 100% sure that we'll do something next week. We will let you know in advance. What we're going to try and also do possibly is set up some pre-recorded interviews with some people and topics that are relevant to your interests now, especially that we know some of the players who are going to be back. And maybe we'll have those to air so that we're not just, here 1 week, gone the next, or gone 2 weeks or whatever. But just stay tuned to Twitter and Facebook and everything else, and we'll let you know what the plan is whenever we decide what the plan is, or the plan decides what it is for us. Thank you guys for listening, as always. Any we love yous for this week?
No.
You don't love anybody, do you? Thanksgiving's over.
No.
You're mad because you like
I'm just in a, you know, I mean, Matt Pickens. I'll give it to Matt Pickens.
Okay. Yeah, I'll second that. Why not? I still have his gloves, so, you know, maybe I can go play goal.
No.
I wasn't too bad against some 7th and 8th graders, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I feel like we should definitely try to win games.
Okay, I'm just back here to tell Neil and Zach to work harder with our two-man defense. So thank you guys for listening. Ratings and reviews. Preferably 5-star, but I guess if you feel the need to be honest, whatever. I don't know. Integrity doesn't count in voting for anything anymore, as we've all seen. So just give us 5 stars, even if you hate us, whatever you listen to us on. Thank you again to Wolfface for being a local band with cool music. Thank you to Radio St. Pete for being a local business with the incredibly poor foresight to let us do this usually once a week. Thank you to Shamrock for supporting us all along. And thank you to Big Storm for damaging our livers on occasion. This has been The Unused Substitutes. We will talk to you in the near future.
Peace.
I was waiting for you to do like your little Sia thing.